RunAsRadio.com. You're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 99 with guest David Sengupta, recorded Wednesday, February 18th, 2009. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Yes, you're listening to Run As Radio. I'm your host, Richard Campbell. With me, as always, my co-host, Greg Hughes.
Hey there, everybody. Richard, how are you today?
I am doing well, sir. And, you know, show 100 is impending.
Yeah, coming right up.
I didn't expect it to go quite this quickly. I'm surprised and delighted.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, this almost a couple year run that we've been doing now.
So far, so good. I don't know when it's going to end. I hope it doesn't anytime soon. And we've got our usual raft of conferences. I'm just about to put the bow on TechEd US for us.
Yep, another busy conference year.
Yeah, definitely. And although TechEd US this time is only going to be 1 week, so the IT and dev are going to be mixed again, which means you, me, and Carl will be together for a change.
Right. That'll be fun for all three of us to be there. We were together for the Connections conference, I guess, for just one day when I was down there.
Right.
And all three of us were together that one day. So it's always kind of good to be able to all get together in the same place.
And it looks like I'm going to be organizing Speaker Idol again, so get a chance to find new speakers for TechEd.
Yeah, anybody out there who's interested, who, you know, is a presenter or feels like, you know, you would be a contender to present at a conference with the caliber of TechEd, and get a hold of Richard, because he's the man.
Yeah, you bet. And the rules are simple. You have to be an experienced speaker, you could never have spoken at TechEd before, and you have to be attending
right.
TechEd. Fire me an email, info@runasradio.com, and we'll see if we can make you a contestant.
And for that matter, if you have any ideas for future shows or questions or thoughts or comments, you can also use that email address there, info@runasradio.com.
Awesome. All right, let's get to our guest. David Sengupta is the Director, Unified Communications for Quest Software. He leads Quest's UC business, including Microsoft Exchange, Office Communications Server, Archiving and Electronic Discovery, and other messaging systems. A seasoned enterprise software industry veteran, David's experience includes senior positions in public and private sector, enterprise systems management, hosting, startups, infrastructure consulting, and legal discovery. A Microsoft Exchange MVP since 1998, pretty much since the beginning of Exchange. Sengupta has contributed to most Exchange and Windows magazines and many books and white papers. He is a frequent speaker at global events, including Microsoft TechEd and IT Forum. He has worked with Microsoft Exchange since its inception. See, I called it.
Very beginning.
David has an MTS from Tyndale Seminary, Canada, and a BSc from the University of Ottawa, and an MCSE messaging. He lives near Ottawa, Canada. Welcome, David.
Hey, David.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And I was just commenting, you were show number 2, and here you are at 99.
That's right. It's been a while.
So it has been a while, and we were talking before we started recording here just a little bit about cloud computing, and obviously that's top of mind of lots of folks these days. Where does it fit in Quest's look these days?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I mean, Quest, as you know, has been doing a lot around management of unified communications environments, notably Exchange and Office Communications Server, migrations, that kind of thing. And so with the move to cloud computing, email is one of the first applications that organizations are looking at migrating to the cloud. And so obviously there's an interest from a Quest perspective and also from the industry as far as watching adoption and some of the challenges that come up.
And what's fascinating to me, email is a great application because I think it hits all the concerns around cloud computing as much as the advantages. Let's just compare the idea of like Gmail. Wouldn't that effectively be cloud email?
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing organizations considering moving to any number of cloud providers. So Google Apps with their email and calendaring and Google Docs is one option. Microsoft with their Business Productivity Online suite with Exchange Online and SharePoint Online and other components is another. And then some are looking at IBM or have been using IBM's dedicated hosting. Cisco's obviously entered the fray as well. So we'll see where they take their post-path acquisition and some of the other pieces that they're assembling. And then there's a number of third part, like smaller players, you know, the Intermedias and Aptix and MindShift and LiveOffice and others. So there's very busy space right now and lots of activity.
I'm just trying to decide if anything's actually changed between when we called it application service providing and now that we call it cloud.
Well, I mean, I think one of the important elements is just that there's been a lot of time spent between the whole ASP wave, which was 99, 2000 or so until the bubble burst. I was a part of that back then, and it was quite the challenge to get Exchange 2000 at the time to work in a multi-tenant type environment. Microsoft has obviously been, and other platform providers have all been investing heavily in aspects of multi-tenancy, in some cases virtualization, to enable some of these technologies. And also we see the internet, ubiquity and bandwidth and all that kind of thing being a lot more mature than they were 10 years ago.
Doesn't cloud computing mean different things to different people? I mean, I know there's certain definitions of it, but so far we've touched on a couple of different things. I can put my data out there. I can use a hosted exchange or a hosted what have you service provider. But cloud computing now also, especially in some of the newer things that are going on, means I can actually take my applications and the software that I create, for example, and run it out there, quote unquote, in the cloud.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are many elements and different spins on cloud computing.
Yeah, I'm worried that most of it is spin and not products.
Yeah, there are many different perspectives on cloud computing. Some would take the software as a service approach or the software plus services approach, if, for example, Microsoft's approach. Web 2.0, there are many different elements. So I think this space is still very young, and there's a lot of maturing to happen over the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, when you speak with your clients and the people that you interact with on a daily basis about cloud computing, how, maybe step back a little bit. I'll be the step back guy here really quick. If you were going to define and describe the cloud computing to somebody who just doesn't have a fundamental understanding of it, what's your elevator pitch, or how would you distill it down and make it understandable to somebody?
Yeah, so one of the ways of thinking of it is just that the firewall and servers existing within the corporate infrastructure, that's all blending into servers located in remote data centers, being able to talk through web services and other protocols across the internet, and it becoming very almost irrelevant where the servers are actually located. And so this whole abstracting of server farms and all the infrastructure that typically organizations have had to manage themselves, we see some of that moving to, you know, outside of the cloud, to Google, to Amazon, to Microsoft, to third-party hosting providers. And we also see this concept of sort of virtual private clouds happening through virtualization. And so there's those two vectors that we're seeing some interesting things happening.
So I guess we got to dig into the core complaints that most people fear around cloud computing, which is, dude, where's my data? And does it really come down to that? If I'm firing my computer, my business secrets, my IP into some server somewhere that I don't have any control over?
Right, or if I'm responsible for somebody else's, you know, sensitive information and how I store it, because they could become, you know, damaged by it, sort of a third party thing. What are some of the decisions that people have to make when they think about what to do in the cloud and what not to do in the cloud?
Well, as you've mentioned, where your data is obviously a concern. And so in some cases, we have organizations that have regulatory or legal concerns as far as what they can and can't do with their data, whether that data is in a different country, where the data centers are. And, you know, some hosting providers have actually been very reticent to even reveal the location of their data centers, which could be a challenge. With Google, there's always the perception that, you know, hey, these guys make a lot of their money off of ad revenue, and they do that by indexing your data and showing those pop-up ads alongside. And, you know, obviously with Google Apps, when you sign up for Premier, you don't get all that. But there's always that sort of subtle worry that, hey, you know, maybe these guys are still indexing all of my data, and what are they doing with it, and those kind of concerns. We've seen, I mean, Facebook obviously doesn't apply in any enterprise hosting perspective, but we've seen a lot of noise just this last weekend around Facebook and what they could say that they can do with data and all that kind of thing. And the same sort of thing applies to any kind of hosting provider. So one of the concerns that we hear, especially with enterprises considering moving to a Microsoft or a Google, is just this perception that they, you know, rightly so, I think, to that they want to actually encrypt their data when it's stored or, you know, when it's in transit across the internet. And I think we'll see that whole data encryption start to play a much bigger role. And then that brings a lot of challenges as far as if I'm hosted, let's say all my email is hosted with Microsoft and I've got some business partners that I want to communicate with, I need to be able to, you know, decrypt that data whenever I send to those, but keep it encrypted while it's in the hoster and so on.
So is that an argument maybe for the sort of the next phase of cloud computing or the current big push that we're seeing some of the vendors doing now, which is I can have a, like you've mentioned, a virtual Windows or Linux or what have you computer that runs in the cloud. So I can actually have all the control over that. I can get, you know, complete access as to how the application runs and what the standards are that I run it under, and how that information is encrypted or what have you, but still leverage the cloud infrastructure.
Yeah, Amazon has done some interesting things with their Elastic Compute Cloud that sort of relate to what you're talking about, being able to spin up any number of different servers, and they tend to be more focused on the burst computing side of things, but we think that this is something that's starting to happen more and more. And historically, when you look at IBM and Microsoft and a lot of the hosting that has happened so far, it has been more of a dedicated kind of, you know, companies that just want to outsource their IT infrastructure, hand off all of their servers and manage it in essentially an extension of their private intranet, except that that extension goes to the hoster. And so there definitely continues to be that, what we're loosely referring to as a dedicated hosted infrastructure, whether it's at Microsoft or IBM or any number of other providers. We think the technology is evolving pretty quickly so that those providers, one of their challenges is how do they do that cost effectively? And so we see a real shift happening towards being able to use multi-tenant type systems. And so we see vendors investing heavily in rebuilding core apps for messaging and so on to make them multi-tenant, so that they can have the lower price and ship solutions that meet SMBs, for example, that can't pay for or can't afford, in many cases, a dedicated infrastructure at some hoster.
Yeah, you know, there's sort of axiomatic thoughts that I keep having around this. Like, there's, you have to have a, if you're going to buy into this cloud computing model, you have to believe that they can run it less expensively than you can, that what you're charged costs you less. Is this purely an ignorance play? We don't understand how to do this well, but they do, so we pay them to do it?
Yeah, that plays a big part. And we are hearing at least some of the early feedback that we're getting. And obviously that is heavily tainted by some of the case studies that many of these vendors are looking to get out because they're still trying to attract their early adopters to their platforms. But obviously, depending on the vendor and their experience, there are many cases where the service provider can actually give you a better level of service. Challenges, you know, abound, whether it's internet connectivity, having to make sure that you've got the best connectivity there. You need to select a vendor that can give you the service and that's going to be around for a long time. You can't really give your hosted data off to a company that doesn't have the vendor viability that's required, of course. Many players of all sizes in the hosting business, so we think there's going to be a lot of consolidation in this space as well. But the economy is, you know, the timing is actually very good for cloud computing in general, especially around hosted exchange or hosted email with Google Apps and so on, in that companies have the impetus to look for, you know, cost-controlling measures or cost-cutting measures and the pricing that they're seeing with Exchange Online or with Google Apps is very attractive.
You know, it's interesting. I had a call this morning from a client of mine asking me about some detailed questions because they've made the decision now to move from hosting their own email systems to going with that outsourced application, you know, in the cloud type of model. So it is happening more and more. At Quest, are you guys looking at, you know, like economies of scale and some of the savings, and are there any general rules that companies can take into consideration when it comes to what does it cost to do X versus doing Y?
Yeah, I mean, at Quest, we're not actually doing the hosted exchange, and so we're leaving that up to the providers to do that ROI. Our job, you know, we see our role as not so much convincing people to move to cloud computing. We leave that up to the Microsofts and Googles and others.
Sure.
We really focus in on helping people manage and move. And so one of the big challenges right now is how do customers onboard. Often we're seeing people move from Notes to GroupWise, for example, to Exchange Online. And so we have a solution that will migrate them from their on-premises Notes environment or their on-premises GroupWise environment up to Exchange Online through our migration tools that they're comfortable with. And so we start sort of with migration, and then management becomes part of that as well.
The two kind of go hand in hand. I think the thing that I, as an IT guy, I just get the willies around who's actually backing up my stuff, how reliable is it, what does disaster recovery look like? Is there anything more helpless than the system is down and you can't get through to the guy? You know, that whole sense.
We have help, it's fallen, I can't get it back. Yeah,
yeah. We're giving up a sense of control for arguably, and really, I guess that's the question: is it all we're trying to do here is save money?
In most cases, it's either saving money or offloading something that isn't the core competency for an organization. Let's say they're a financial institution; they don't want to have maintain a competency in managing large databases or email systems or all that kind of thing. There is a performance element in some cases as well. If you've got organizations that have really struggled with maintaining, you know, a reasonably functioning email system, then being able to upload that to something that's more reliable does play a factor in some cases.
You mentioned financial institutions. There's a lot of compliance issues associated with the financial services industry. What are you seeing are the considerations that regulated industries need to take into account when they think about outsourcing things? I mean, I think about, you know, instant messaging in a bank, for example. I'm sure you touched on this in your work is, you know, that there's regulations around, you know, recording of that type of information and information around how it's retained and email and other types of data. Is there a resistance in those sectors to use the cloud, or are you seeing that those institutions, that there are organizations that are finding that it is usable and there are ways that they can do it?
Yeah, from what I've seen, and I haven't seen the full spectrum of what a Microsoft or a Google would see, but from what I'm seeing is the heavily regulated environments tend to keep the data themselves. They don't hand that off to the hosting providers. There are options. For example, with our, you know, Quest archiving solution, we can have an on-premises safe harbor copy of everything that is sent off, for example, to Exchange Online for vendors that are looking at doing that. But for the most part, the heavily regulated industries that I've been aware of, they've been keeping their data in-house.
Well, one of the things I've noticed in the culture of heavily regulated industries, and I think of healthcare and financials, but any big corp that's facing SOX to some degree is afraid to challenge the rules. They don't want to be the first one to find out, hey, actually, this cloud computing implementation is SOX compliant. So I almost think we've got a regulatory trap going on right now where nobody's willing to be first to find out if that's compliant or not.
Well, and the difficulty is that there's not really such thing as SOX compliant.
Right.
So that it is difficult to know whether it's safe to take that step.
Yeah, I mean, we're in a real proving ground right now as far as hosted email systems. And so the hosting providers are, you know, incredibly focused on high availability and security and identity, federation, that kind of thing. I mean, those are their primary concerns right now as far as if they have, I mean, anytime Google, for example, has had outages, you read about it on all the blogs and news media and
right.
That kind of thing. You know, they're being incredibly heavily scrutinized. And so a lot of the investment right now is just making sure that, A, those systems are up all the time. B, the solution offering is at least the perceived availability is there. And so things like Outlook cache mode, for example, really help in that clients don't always notice if there's a small blip or that kind of thing, if they're using technologies like that. And really just making sure that for the most part, we're seeing the hosters just create a black box that just no one could get in and into from a security standpoint or even from a manageability standpoint.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing is we're how much effort have we put into as IT folks in the past few years for transparency into our system, and this seems to be the opposite of that.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I think, like I said, right now we're sort of in the first wave where the hosters are really just focused on proving themselves. I think that there's going to be, as adoption grows, customers are really going to start pushing back and asking for, you know, what does it mean to have a single pane of glass, for example, to see where all my data is? I might have some data off on Google Apps. I might have some others, you know, some information stored at Live Office. I might have something off on Microsoft's SharePoint Online. You know, what does e-discovery look like in that context? I've got a lawsuit. I need to produce all my evidence. I need to do it within a certain period of time.
Right.
You know, do I have SLAs established with all these vendors? You know, what are those SLAs? What are the costs for me? I mean, there's a lot of complexity in this kind of hybrid scenario.
Sure.
Well, yep. you can see that you'd probably end up having, you know, different types of cloud hosting providers and providing different levels of SLAs, and it's really just going to be another flavor of what we've always done, right? You pay more for high availability, you pay more for 24/7 response, you pay more for monitoring. It's just kind of the way it works, but the infrastructure is what's really changing.
Yeah, for sure. And the lack of control. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I was speaking to a company just recently, 150 person company. I mean, these guys have data with Google Apps or with Gmail. They're using PostGenie. They've split off their, you know, they've got high priority users and sort of lower priority users within an organization. So they've got some hosted Exchange, some hosted Gmail, they've got Salesforce, you know, they've got BlackBerry and other mobile devices, you know, and just the coexistence scenarios alone are incredibly right. complex. I mean, what does it mean? You know, how is your email routing through your environment? I mean, these guys had, you know, a simple issue with, that was sort of, Google and PostGenie were sort of fighting about whose it was, and it took them something like 40 days to resolve. So, I mean, there's some incredible challenges that can come up when not all of the infrastructure and levels of service are there as you would expect. I mean, not all hosters have the same, 24/7 support lines
sure.
or ticketing systems where you can open a trouble ticket that companies are used to having internally.
Yeah, as the person directing the operations of your IT department, there is a certain amount of either potential or very real benefit to being able to walk over to a couple of desks and say, hey, you two or three people, come with me. We're going to sit down in this conference room until this problem is solved. You don't really get that when you have no number to call Google to get support or to talk to PostGenie, for example.
That's right. And I mean, readiness from a hosting standpoint, you know, goes beyond just the technology and the support. I mean, it goes into things like how easy is it to trial, if I want to just try out a hosting service for 30 days, 60 days, that kind of thing. You know, migration I mentioned and provisioning and what does management look like. But I mean, in many cases, we're hearing, I mean, a lot of the early discussion that I'm hearing, especially in the SMB type and SOHO space, is Google versus Microsoft. Google comes in with a much lower price.
Right.
Gives you 25 gigs of storage. Microsoft gives you much less. But then you get into the whole, you know, it's almost sort of religious in a way, in that some people really like, you know, they swear by the Google interface, the Gmail, they love the simplicity of it, all that kind of thing. And then you've got other people that tend to be more from a corporate environment that have been using Outlook for years. They can't understand
right.
how people could like Gmail. They're used to having their offline client when they're on a plane and all that kind of thing. And sure, Google Gears is out. It's in beta. You know, they don't want to put the beta software on their machine. They don't quite get the whole offline client thing for a web browser. And so there's just a lot of I don't know what you call it, but just sort of that split community between Google versus Microsoft that is heating up right now. Things like the G1 phone and the iPhone versus BlackBerry versus Windows Mobile all
sure.
play into this as well.
Well, and over time, it's a more and more polarized type of society around those things, too, isn't it?
It is. It becomes like a Mac versus PC kind of story.
Right.
When I think the sort of ghost in this whole thing is Amazon. I mean, I like Amazon's core message of, we have this big infrastructure, we're not using it all, so we'll rent some of it out to you. Which
mm-hmm.
you can really buy into the sense of, it's good enough for Amazon to use, it's good enough for me to use. But it's also not a straight up email offering or anything like that. It's components of applications.
Yeah, Amazon is very interesting in that, in many ways, I mean, Ballmer himself has said that, has implied that they're ahead of the curve and that we all have a lot to learn from Amazon. Some pretty phenomenal. I mean, you look at Animoto, for example, and you know, the story of how Animoto and their video editing and all that kind of thing came about, and how they're using just EC2 technology to be able to burst and handle the big volume of customers, you know, generating videos and all that kind of thing. Very interesting model, but like you say, there's no email. It's more of an infrastructure play. You know, almost in some ways, I think of it sort of similar in some ways to Azure or Blue Cloud or that kind of thing. So,
sure, and yes, that's the other angle on this. It's not just taking services you have today and outsourcing them, but building new things using this infrastructure to lower the barrier of entry to creating a scalable application or something that's worldwide.
Yeah, the distributed component of that application, the high availability and the global distribution of the infrastructure, that's something that for any individual company, except for maybe, you know, the biggest companies in the world, is a pretty costly and expensive thing to do. So that's probably one tangible benefit of that type of infrastructure, is you kind of get that for part of the package.
One of the things that when we look at and talk to customers that are considering all this, I can't underscore how important it is for companies to really be proactive about cloud computing and actually have a plan in place or some sort of a strategy, as opposed to just going piecemeal, putting a piece here, putting a piece there, because the piecemeal approach ends up with this massive, I mean, as we've talked about before, amount of complexity, data all over the place, and they end up with this, you know, very distributed, out of control. I mean, if you think public folders can be messy, you know, when you get let end users use them wherever they are, you know, whatever, yeah, for whatever they want them for. I mean, this just gets, you know, multiple orders of magnitude more complex as far as, you know, data that's all over the place and can get out of control very quickly, especially if end users are empowered to, you know, put their data in different places and stuff like that. It makes PSDs look, you know, almost great, you know. So, and we have to keep in mind that there are already many pieces of technology that customers use that have essentially a cloud component to them already.
Sure.
You know, BlackBerry, RIM, I mean, really, there's a cloud component there if you think about it. Yeah. Google with Postini, you know, many organizations are using Postini today, which is one of the ways that Google gets into those clients, to build out from that. Salesforce.com, great model, and many others as well.
Well, guys, I think we're getting down to the end of the show here. And I feel like it's been all doom and gloom, that this is all got nothing but problems.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think what we're seeing is the early, sort of the thin edge of the wedge, as far as adoption of a model that, you know, we think is going to revolutionize the whole enterprise computing arena. The big question right now is just when. When is this all going to happen? You know, are things going to take off in 2009? You know, Chris Capossela made a pretty famous statement a while back about, you know, 50% of all the exchange licenses or exchange customers would be on Exchange Online in, you know, a number of years. It was a pretty short time frame, I think 5 years or something like that. You know, the question is just, what does all this look like? I mean, is it going to be 50% by 2010? Is it going to be 30% or 20%? Or, you know, when is that whole adoption going to happen? And so, this particular conversation, you know, we've talked a lot about some of the challenges and that kind of thing. I think that's natural for the early adoption and sort of the front end of an adoption curve like this.
Sure.
As this takes off, I think there's no question that, you know, hosted email is definitely going to take off and is going to dominate in X amount of years. The question is just, what is X? Is it 5, 10 years? Is it 3 years? That's the big question right now.
Well, I know I've gone from hosting my own email systems to being completely on third-party hosting systems now, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I've been running Exchange Online now for quite a while, and so my email is on Exchange Online, and it's been great.
Well, the proof's in the pudding then, guys, that you're actually doing it. I'm still running my own gear, so maybe I'm the stick in the mud here.
Yeah, you're the cloud computing Luddite, I guess is what you are, right? So I actually use and I sort of take the best of breed approach. I actually have, so my email actually goes through Google systems first and gets stored in its entirety there and spam filtered prior to being immediately forwarded on to my hosted Exchange system, which is where I actually access all of my mail. So I have two copies of the email in the cloud everywhere. including all the spam if I really care about that for 30 days. But I've found performance-wise and in terms of the feature functionality that I get out of that hybrid approach, works really, really well.
Interesting. David Sengupta, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Appreciate the time.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.